It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
My name is Marcela Cornejo. I've been in Australia since 1988. I came here as a young woman, and now I'm a grandmother. I got 4 children, 6 grandchildren, and they're all mixed up. I got beautiful black grandchildren, Australian grandchildren, and that support my beliefs. We're part of the world. I'm happy to be in Australia. I had a career in this country. I've been working. I'm very active. What's going on in Australia? My passion is to fight for a better world in every single way for everybody.
This is In My Country, stories of people who came to Australia as refugees or asylum seekers and the many places we call home.
Hosted by Adam Wood and me, Pia Perversi-Birchall. This podcast was produced on Turrbal and Yuggera country. We pay our respects to traditional owners, past, present and emerging.
We'd be impressed if you ever met a woman gutsier than Marcela Cornejo. Marcela is from Chile. In today's episode, Pia talks to her about her activism against Chile's dictatorship in the 1980s and about the sadness and loss she still carries from having to leave her country behind.
In my country, Chile, full of colors, full of flavors, full of family, full of life. I did learn to fight for my rights. I did learn not to fear the dictator. My country, Chile, it gave me the sense when you're united and you believe in hope, since change, and you can be part of that big change. I was part of that big change in Chile, and I'm so proud, even though we lost a lot, I will do it all over again.
It was 1988 and Marcela was 27 when she came to Australia as a refugee. She came with her husband Gonzalo, 3 children and a hell of a lot of life experience. It was a completely different world to the country she'd left behind.
For us, it was like we're going to paradise kind of thing, because they did say you're going to be safe, you're going to be able to work, to be educated, you're going to send your children to school, you're going to get paid, you're going to eat. In Melbourne, they were waiting for us in the airport with the bus. And then we got into the hotel in Melbourne.
That's the Enterprise Migrant Hostel, which provided accommodation and settlement services to over 30,000 refugees and migrants between 1970 and 1992.
We had a beautiful little apartment with no kitchen. It had beds and all the facilities, shower, hot water was so good. Hot water.
Had you had hot water in Chile before you came?
No. And we had a big dining area where you used to go for breakfast, lunch and dinner. And I remember taking my children to the big buffet. And in those times, the buffet had everything on the table. So we used to pile up food on top of our tray, like we were carrying more than what we could eat.
New arrivals to Australia stayed at the Enterprise Migrant Hostel until they were ready to live independently. Despite not speaking a word of English when they arrived.
None of you?
No, none. No.
The family were out of the hostel within 3 months. Marcela and Gonzalo worked hard to set themselves up and stand on their own 2 feet in this new country.
The first shock for me was when I went to the first time to the English class, and I could not talk to anybody because nobody in my English class did speak Spanish. And I just sat there and I didn't understand nothing. And I got to my flat and I did cry and I cried and I cried because I thought I didn't understand a thing. And I need to feel here. I need to know what's going on. And that day I promised to myself, I don't care. I have to learn this language. I need to fit in this society. I didn't have another choice. Be isolated, not understand anything, or go against that and learn. So my husband did progress really well in his English class. He was very fast, and he got offered to start doing TAFE course, welding. So that was a full-time study for refugees and migrant people.
And he started that 3 months after he arrived in Australia, in English, studying in English.
Yes, wow. Yes, he did it. So we decided to get out of the hotel. Eventually, in a year, we were just living in Australia like everybody else. My husband did find a job, and then I did find a job as well cleaning toilets. Mm-hmm. So he was doing his full-time welding work, children going to school, and I was doing 3 hours in the afternoon. So everything was open for us. Everything was, if you want to do it, we could do it. Nobody did stop us.
Marcela had one clear rule for her family. No English was to be spoken inside their house.
Doesn't matter what. Because I did open the rest of our family to this society in every other way. We start mixing with people. I used to talk to the people in the school, try to make friends. They tried to mix up with whoever was around. I didn't care. So the only thing I did decide to keep it was our language. But all the rest, we're blending with whatever was coming through.
I'd be interested to hear you paint a bit of a picture about life in Chile before Pinochet.
Well, I was very young. When the dictatorship took the power, I was just 13.
Chile was governed by a military dictatorship led by Augusto Pinochet between 1974 and 1990. It's been reported that Pinochet's regime arrested 130,000 opponents in its first 3 years of operation. Many of those arrested were tortured, and a large number disappeared. The dictatorship came to power after Pinochet overthrew the newly elected socialist government of Salvador Allende. Marcela was living in Santiago at the time.
The day when the dictatorship took the government, we were all at school. I remember my teacher were very upset and everybody was very nervous and everybody was saying we have to go to the assembly point. Is something going on? But we didn't have no explanation what was happening. So the teacher was saying, if you call little sisters or brothers in the other classes, just gathering everybody together and try to get home. So I remember walking because my school was like 3 suburbs away from my place. So I remember walking through the street and they were already fighting on the street. There were people shooting each other. And I can see very clear the airplane. Because where we were, it was high, so you can see the building of the city. And I can see the big aeroplane just come in and start bombing the central of the city. And I just remember, just grab my sisters and go fast as I could to get home. And then we could not get out of the house for months. Everything was curfew. We could not even open the doors, open the windows, nothing, because there were bullets coming from everywhere. We were very close from military base. So bullets were coming and going all the time. And we were completely isolated. You could not see your neighbors. You could not go to the city. You could not go and buy stuff. It was the whole country in curfew for a long time, very long time.
So during that 6 months, no school?
Nothing. So we lost like a year of a school and everything. Yeah, we lost a lot in those times.
What did you do
with your day? Just inside the house.
Playing with your
Do you have well, we got step sisters and all that, so we just need to be like in a big jail. The whole country was like in a big jail.
And did you have phones?
No.
So phone, you're not talking to the neighbours on the
phone? Yeah. Just a TV, black and white. Yeah, so we were just knowing what the TV was saying. And all the media was controlled straight away by the military. So when we used to watch the TV in those times, it was all about against Salvador Allende and his government. In those times, the media wasn't that good like now. You know, we don't have internet. We didn't have all those good, fast stuff to say this is different, what's going on. So we just did believe what the TV was saying. And the TV was saying the Allende government was a bad communists and terrorists and running by Russia and Cuba. So everybody did believe that. So that was the fear we had. But we didn't know they were killing people on the street. We didn't know they were disappearing people. They were doing all that repression against the people.
And when did you realize what was actually going on?
When I got married. I met my husband and his family, they were all in the left-wing side, just opposite to the dictatorship. So I did start learning the other side of the coin.
Marcela met her husband Gonzalo at Fiestas Patrias, Chile's annual independence celebration. It was 1979.
We went to the city with my sister, and I was 19. And she said to me, look, there's a very handsome man across the road in the other table. I said, yeah, but I don't like blue eyes and blonde people. Anyway, eventually my sister got sick because she drank too much and I had to take her to the bathroom. And when I came out of the bathroom, my future husband was waiting for me and my sister's boyfriend, they were talking.
What did you like about him?
Gonzalo was completely different than everything what I knew. He was older than me, 3 years older. He wasn't a boy, you know what I mean? It wasn't like more men, so I did fell in love with that side. Yeah. We got married a year later in September 1980.
As a young married couple, there were not a lot of opportunities under the dictatorship. For them and most citizens, there was severely limited access to education, housing, financial loans, work, and security. This was especially felt by the youth of the country. So they began to organize themselves.
And because we were young, we didn't have no much to lose, a part of our life and our freedom.
And fight against the government.
We did a star fight. So Gonzalo didn't have education. I just did finish my high school and we did join the rest of the young people with no future. Absolutely no future whatsoever, nothing. We didn't have access to have a house or apply for a loan or nothing. We didn't have nothing. And eventually we did start participating.
Wanting to do more, Marcela and Gonzalo started attending meetings to learn about and discuss what was happening in their country. They studied communist theory, socialist theory, Marx and Engels. Eventually, they joined a group.
We were a member of a committee. They were calling people without a roof, people without houses.
The Committee of the People Without Houses were a group of activists. They organised public actions to push the government to do something about the lack of affordable housing.
So we used to go to the newspaper demanding rights.
So rights for young people.
Yeah, to access housing, yeah.
They were also part of a socialist political alliance.
Every month there were a big protest in Chile to tell the dictatorship that the Chilean people wasn't happy with it. In every single uprising we had in Chile, we were stopping the street, doing a lot of propaganda against the dictatorship. We were doing all these actions just to open the minds of the other people and show to them what really was happening with the future in Chile. We were writing on the walls in the nighttime against the dictatorship and we were burning tires in the street. Anyway, so Gonzalo was very active. He had a military background, so he knew about logistics and a lot of things about military issues. So we were doing a lot of things like, you know, to break the system, to demonstrate the country was in a very bad shape.
How dangerous was that for you to be
very
doing
dangerous.
That?
Very dangerous. We knew from the beginning it was a dangerous road because we were against the dictatorship and all that big thing. It was so scary in Chile. Everybody was scared to do something, to stand up against the system. The risk was, or you get killed on the street, or you get arrested or get disappeared, or you get arrested, go to jail, or you get relegated to being sent to another city where nobody knows you and they live in the middle of the street and you have to find your way how to survive. So the repression was, or you get arrested, you get killed, or you get disappeared. So that was the three options. And we knew the options. Since we did start to be part of the movement against Pinochet, we knew it was dangerous. We knew.
How did you make the decision that that was worth the risk?
Because we didn't have anything else. As a young mom and young wife, I didn't have no options, nothing. So we decided, well, we live like a doorman, nothing happening here, and yeah, we just don't do anything to change our future, or we do something and feel better about it.
Eventually, they were forced to face the reality of that decision head on.
Can you tell me about the day when he was arrested?
We have to do that?
No. Up to you. Entirely up to you.
Let me do it. It's what we have to do. I was thinking I'm going to get over, but I never get over.
Mm. What is it about it that's still so upsetting?
That day, everything just did change. Absolutely everything. We were a happy, poor couple doing something for our country. And we did believe it was the right thing to do it. And that day, just the whole scene just disappeared. No, our beliefs, but we were planning a future, but this plan of future wasn't material, it was just to change our country for better and look for better conditions of our life, like together with the other people were fighting with us against the dictatorship. So the whole thing just disappeared that day. And that day is impacting until today. Maybe for us, it was just part of the sacrifice that we have to do to change our country. It was a cause. It changed our life. It changed my children's life, my family life. But I don't regret it. I think we will do it all over again if we have to do it.
It was July 1983, and momentum had started to build in the resistance against Pinochet.
1983 was the year Chile did lose the FIA.
The Committee of the People Without Houses were preparing to occupy a piece of vacant land in Santiago. On the day of the occupation, Marcela was 8 months pregnant with her daughter Lily, and she had her 1.5-year-old son Gonzalo Jr. with her. The women and the children set up tents and gathered together to physically occupy the land. The men stood guard at the boundaries. Their goal was to set up a makeshift camp of temporary housing for the people to live in, basically to start a squat. But the police arrived.
We were attacked with tear gas and police start hitting everybody. So I have to run with my child in my hip and we have to escape from there. So it was a lot of running and tear gas. So it was very catastrophic day. We didn't get anything. We were in the news. That was important.
That night, after all the stress and physical strain, Marcela's waters broke. She was taken to hospital.
They tried to keep Liliana safe. But in the end, I was just pushing her.
Lily was born a month early, on the 30th of July, 1983. But even in the midst of new life, their work didn't stop. The following day, the 6th of August, was going to be an important day for Chile. Marcela described it as the beginning of the end of the dictatorship. It felt like the whole country had come together to protest. Community organisations, students, universities, human rights organisations, unions. Every town and every city was getting ready. Marcela and Gonzalo had been on the ground organising in Santiago. They planned to block the roads, cut the electricity, and stop the military and police. Collectively, they wanted to stop the country. Things in Chile had escalated to a point that members of the Socialist Alliance were carrying guns.
So that's important to tell. We were carrying a weapon to fight against the repression, to defend our life against the repression. But I have to be honest too. I don't feel guilty we were carrying a gun. My position, where we were in time and space, we didn't have another option. The secret police and the army used to come around without warning and start shooting people on the street or arresting people or destroying houses, pushing the doors down and throwing tear gas bombs and taking all the men's just for the sake of install fear in the normal common people. So the violence, it was very, very hard. It was extreme violence. They didn't care. So we decide as a group, we need to defend ourselves. When they were coming to stop us, they were coming and shooting people. So the aim was to shoot them back, not to kill. It was just shooting to the air or something just to tell them, here we are and we're going to stand up against you. That was the purpose of having that gun. Because if you're looking to build a better society, you cannot become one of them as well. Because I believe whoever did follow the dictator, it was a victim too, because they have to follow orders. They were turned against their own people to follow the dictatorship. So it was a human being in the other end too. So they bought a second-hand gun and it was even broken.
Didn't work.
No, it didn't work very well. If you, I look back those times, it was like, what we were doing? They had machine guns. They had machine cars. They had tanks. They used to go into our street, destroy everything on their way. And we had that little tiny gun, even didn't work. So we really were fighting against a big giant. Little tiny people there, like little ants around, tried to cause a chaos and demonstrate to the dictators, here we are, we are strong, we're going to put your government down and blah, blah, blah. But in a very, very kind of basic way.
We asked Marcela, what did they risk if they didn't protest?
If we didn't stand as a people, as a country against the dictatorship, he will continue, you know? So if we didn't do that, Chile could be like another long time, forever dictatorship state. And plus, it wasn't just us unhappy. In those times, the minority was the right wing supporting the dictatorship state. And us, the majority, wants the change. 90% of the young people were in the same thing. Even the unions, every single union was a stand up against the dictatorship. So it was the time to do something. It was now or never. And we did it without thinking about it.
But unbeknownst to Marcela and Gonzalo, a member of the organizing party had been intercepted by police.
One of the person was taking some equipment, illegal equipment, to hide it away. And unfortunately, that person didn't follow the procedures what we had in plan for not to be caught, and he got arrested.
Their plans had been exposed. The night Marcela returned from hospital with Lily, Gonzalo arrived home late and they went to sleep.
I was breastfeeding Lillian around 5 a.m. in the morning and I hear the big bang bang in the door. And I can hear my mom crying and saying, don't take him, don't take him. So I said to Gonzalo, Gonzalo, get up, there's something going on. And Gonzalo just got his pen on and they were banging our door because we were locked inside. So Gonzalo did open the door and straight away they put a gun on his neck. And I look at him. We didn't see anything in each other. We just look at each other and he said, okay, I'm going.
It was Fuerzas Especiales, the secret police. Gonzalo was terrified they would find the socialist reading and campaign material hidden under their bed.
It was all against the dictatorship and it was all about communism and socialism. So Gonzalo just wanted to take all of them away from the room so they didn't search what we had in the room. Plus my mom didn't know we had that in the room. So it was like they couldn't arrest everybody and that would be a disaster.
The police didn't find the hidden materials, but Gonzalo had been implicated in a crime. Their colleague who had been arrested had been found with a gun and he told the secret police that he was on his way to deliver it to Gonzalo.
So Gonzalo was taken straight away by secret police.
What Marcela did next may well have saved Gonzalo's life.
As soon as they left with Gonzalo, I said to my mom, you look after the baby and I know when I'm coming back.
Lily was just 6 days old.
Marcela didn't return for 3 days. She went straight to Gonzalo's parents' house and told them about his arrest. She then went to a local radio station where she had an interview to raise the alarm. By making his arrest public, there was less chance of Gonzalo disappearing.
That was the first thing I have to do. Because it wasn't public, it could be just disappear and nobody know. And they will wipe every single information about him.
She went to a human rights organisation run by the Catholic Church and had an interview with a lawyer. The church reported Gonzalo's arrest to the Supreme Court. Reporting the arrest through the formal channels meant that it was on the record that Gonzalo was arrested illegally and his whereabouts were unknown. All of this happened on the first day.
I went back to my mother-in-law house and the next day we started looking in every single jail to look where he was arrested. We could not find him for 6 days.
Eventually, they got a tip-off about where he was being held, in a compound managed by the secret police.
I just didn't spend like 5 or 6 days outside with Liliana in my arms, waiting for news for Gonzalo. I didn't stay, I think, just 24 hours, just didn't go home until I knew what happened with him.
On one of those days, while she sat outside the jail, an acquaintance walked past.
He recognized me. And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, just waiting to know if your Gonzalo is here. He said, because he got arrested and we don't know where he is. And he said, just wait for me. I'm going to go inside and see if he's here. And he came back with the avocado seed. And in that avocado seed, it was a message for me.
From Gonzalo?
From Gonzalo.
What did it say?
I love you. I'm alive. I still have that. It was a hope he was alive because I knew he was killed. I thought he was killed.
The next day, Marcela went to the jail and refused to leave until she was given information. She was told that Gonzalo was going to be transferred to the public jail. In the public jail, 15 days after Gonzalo's arrest, Marcela was finally able to see her husband.
Gonzalo was very agitated. He was very pale and he was very desperate to know if he had a lawyer and who was supporting me legally. He was upset because Liliana was just born and we were expecting Liliana with joy. You know, it was our little girl was coming home and all that was gone. We didn't have that joy or those happiness of coming into the world, so.
Do you think if you hadn't have gone and sat outside the jail and hadn't gone to the radio, do you think he still would have been transferred to the public jail?
No. He got tortured in there. They came to interrogate him from the secret police, but they didn't leave him to be moved to the other secret police premises. So I have to do that.
Marcela's activism took on a new focus after Gonzalo's arrest.
We had a group of women's mothers, sisters, girlfriends, wives fighting for the rights of the political prisoners under the umbrella of the Catholic Church. That umbrella was called Vicaría de la Solidaridad, Department of the Solidarity,
okay.
Because the Catholic Church knew people were disappeared, people were getting arrested, people were tortured. So they did generate this umbrella to receive and to look after all the people under torture, repression, disappearing. So we had a place where to go and ask for help. So I was in the committee. So for 3 years, I was working full-time for the liberation of the political prisoners and the rights of the political prisoners in Chile. Yeah. It's not like Australia. You see the person in a nice, beautiful room with seat and chairs or TV. No, there used to be like 20 people in one little room. You know, there was a lot of bad conditions, like very inhuman inside the jail. He got sent to be killed. Going to a jail where it was a no political prisoner, you were on your own. He had to fight a few times for his life in there.
Marcela decided she had to get him out. Gonzalo had been sentenced to 4 years and 1 day in prison. But Marcela said as a political prisoner, his expected time was vague and indefinite.
Without not knowing when it's going to be finished off 4 years. They say 4 years in 1 day, and that day never gets. So you never knew when you're going to be free. So I did kind of start learning about the rights of the people in jail doing sentence and what is your rights when you got a very good behavior and when you've been out of trouble inside the jail. And the normal prisoners, they got all those rights. But they never got offered to the political prisoner. And for the political prisoner, they were all these problems. They were finished the sentence, but they never had the freedom.
Marcela was dogged in her determination.
Every time when I was doing something for Gonzalo, I used to prepare myself. I used to read about law, about the political things in Chile. I used to read about all the rules inside the jail. So I knew exactly what it was his right, what it was wrong, what I could ask, what I could not ask. So every time when I was meant to see somebody big and ask for something, I wasn't asking as well as my sentimental way. I was asking, this is my right, this is what is in the book, and I want this.
She kept reading and talking and asking questions. She found a law that said that prisoners could apply for earlier release on good behaviour grounds after serving three quarters of their sentence.
It was all these choices. And none of the political prisoners were using those choices. And Gonzalo said to me, Marcela, you know, all these things we can use for me to get out of here.
At this stage, Gonzalo had reached that crucial three-quarter mark. He had completed 3 years of his four-year and one-day sentence. And he was in good stead with prison authorities.
They did respect a lot Gonzalo because Gonzalo did, he was making craft for me to survive outside. So he did give a lot of job opportunity to other people. So there were no more people, country people getting arrested for stealing a pig or
small crimes.
Yeah. Mm. Eventually he got all the respect from the people was running the jail from the guards.
So, with all of this information, what did Marcela do?
I did ask for an interview with the Supreme Court Minister, which is the highest. He was an ex-military man, part of the dictatorship government. But then when he retired, he became the Supreme Court Minister. So I did ask for an interview with him. And everybody in the organization of the human right, they didn't believe I'm going to get anything. And I said, look, whatever happened, I'm just going to do it. I don't care. This is here in paper. He can have this or this or this to get his freedom because he done 3 quarters of his sentence and he's got this right. And all the lawyers, they said to me, Marcela, you're not going to get anywhere. You forget he's a political prisoner. We live in dictatorship. And so nobody did believe I'm going to get something.
She was a young mum with no lawyer behind her, no formal legal training, and she wasn't there on behalf of any organisation. But for some reason, the minister agreed.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
To a meeting.
The night before, I didn't sleep. I was just smoking and thinking what I'm going to say and review my answers and review the law and review every single paragraph in those documentation I was reading about the rights or the wrongs about jail situation. So, yeah.
Across the road from the minister's office was the building where the Vicaría de la Solidaridad was based. Marcela stopped in to see the human rights lawyers before the meeting.
Just, you know, to say, look, this is what I'm going to do and blah, blah, blah. And everybody said to me, Marcela, when you finish, can you just come back and tell us what's happening?
She walked across the road.
So I got there and I don't know if it was my feeling, but everything was big. The couch was big, the table was big, he was big. And I did feel really tiny. And the secretary said to me, yeah, he's waiting for you. So I was sitting in this big leather couch, enormous leather couch. And she said, when he's coming through the corridor, don't talk to him. Don't even say hello, nothing. Wait for me to call you in. So I can see this big man, like 70 years old man or 60, with a big black suit. And he just went like really, you know, like a statue walking through the corridor to his office. So she did call me in and I went to sit across the row of his desk. I thought that's the most polite thing to do. He said, no, don't sit here, sit in the couch. So he put me in that big couch, another big couch, leather couch. And he said to me, tell me why you're here. He was very polite. He wasn't rude. And I did explain to him and I told the story. My husband is already 3/4 of his sentence and I want to use the rights of freedom. And he's been sentenced to 4 years. He done 3 years. He hasn't got no behavior problems. Even he's been tried to finish high school in jail. And I had all that documentation with me. So I put it on his little table. And so he did let me talk. I did talk. And in the end, he said, what you want? And I said, just I want my husband freedom, because the other prisoner had the luxury to apply for this and they get it. So I want my husband to have the same rights. And he just started flicking the pages, all the documentation. And he said, yeah, but one question. Your husband is a terrorist. And I said, no, my husband is not a terrorist. We were doing something to change the course of our country, but we're not terrorists. And then he said to me, yeah, but your husband got arrested because he was having a weapon with him. And I said, but we didn't kill anybody. And he already done his sentence. You can tell me whatever about my husband, but I'm asking for this to you. And he did look at me and he said, okay. And he signs the papers in front of me. I could not believe it. I said, I was like frozen. He said, now you can go. And I don't know if it was just walking on the air. And I went, and everybody was waiting me for me in the other building, all the lawyers from the Human Rights Commitment. And I screamed today, I got it! And I was jumping and screaming and shouting. And everybody said to me, no, you're not joking. No, no, I'm not joking. He did sign and he's going to be free in a month's time and he's free.
Oh, my God.
And that was historic for the political prisoner. We had people 20 years in jail, 15 years in jail, but never did appeal to those rights.
Why do you think he gave you that meeting?
Because when I asked for the meeting, I did say, I'm Marcela Cornejo. My husband is being sentenced to jail, and I want to appeal to the prisoner rights. I did say what I want. And the first thing historically was to get a meeting with him. Nobody could get a meeting with him. It was ridiculous. I'm serious. It was ridiculous.
It baffles me a little because he could have easily said
no.
No.
No. It's just a good thing that happened. A good thing, after all. It was important that step I did. It did a benchmark for other people.
Yeah.
Got the freedom.
The power of one woman.
Gonzalo got his freedom a couple of months later.
And then the second chapter started.
Yeah.
But it wasn't life back to normal.
When Gonzalo came out of the jail, it was a relief, but it was worse than before. Because before he was free, like physically and mentally and in every way he was free. But coming out of jail, he wasn't totally free. He could not do the same things we were doing before. He could not expose himself to get arrested again or get killed.
And after 3 years apart, Gonzalo and Marcela found themselves in very different places, emotionally and mentally.
I was as well very tired. I didn't see my two children grow for 3 years. I miss a lot of things. I don't know how Liliana did grow in those 3 years. I was so busy, so time with the children, it was just so little, and I always was worried for something else, so I don't remember a few things from Liliana and my son. When Gonzalo came back home, I was like, I cannot do this anymore. I need to be home. I need to go back to be a mom and relax and settle down because I was like, go, 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 for 3 years, not stopping. I didn't stop whatsoever. So I was psychological and physically very tired. I was weighed like 40 kilos in those times. I never did eat in those times. I just did smoke a lot. I did change food for cigarettes. Seriously, so my whole life, it was just not me, absolutely not me. It was Gonzalo's life, everybody's life except mine.
Gonzalo's needs were very different.
He did want to go and fight for the rights of the political prisoner after freedom, to be part of the Chilean society again, to have the right to apply for a job or to have the right to get his license, his driver's license.
So if someone has been a political prisoner, then you have restricted rights in the country after that forever.
Yeah, forever. It's just been a very short time that it's been finished in Chile. So Gonzalo did organize all these ex-political prisoners on a group, and they decide to unite themselves and start asking for their own rights under the Catholic umbrella of the solidarity groups. So he did kind of start fighting for that 24/7, and I was at home. So we were living two different lives. Gonzalo had the needs of being free, and I had the needs to be home. And that was really bad. We didn't match. As a couple, we did break up in those times because I want this, he want that. And he didn't fulfill what I want, and I didn't fulfill what he wants from me. So Gonzalo did leave the house and he went to live with his mom. We used to love each other, but we were so different when he came out and I don't know.
And the restrictions on Gonzalo's rights were adding further pressures.
We did struggle a lot because Gonzalo could not provide anything to us.
He couldn't work, so he couldn't survive.
Could not survive. Plus, Gonzalo was getting annoyed by the secret police again. So they start kind of surrounding the house. We knew he was getting follow-up, what he was doing and everything.
Who was it that decided that it was time to leave?
Gonzalo came around one day and he said, I don't know what to do anymore. I cannot do anything. I miss you. I miss the children. I still love you. And I heard this a program for political prisoner being in jail. We can try to get out outside the country. Not because we lost our faith in the fight, but we didn't have escape. We didn't have no option. It was worse. Before we had some options, but after the jail, we didn't have no options. So he said to me, why you not go to the Australian embassy? I heard they having a program for refugees. And I went and I asked for an interview as well. I went again by myself. And they said to me, yeah, but we need to see your husband and bring all your documentation because we need to confirm what you say is true. We have to take all the proof. He was in jail. He was arrested. We were under the umbrella of the human rights organization and he didn't kill anybody. That was very important for the Australian embassy. We didn't kill anybody. Nobody got harm under our battles against the dictatorship.
But they were still looking for ways to stay in Chile. A friend had given the family a piece of farming land in Chiloé in the south. They thought maybe if they left Santiago, they could start fresh and have a quieter, safer life. But Gonzalo was arrested by the secret police on his way there. They wanted him in Santiago where they could keep an eye on him.
So Gonzalo came back from South Chile and he said to me, you know what? I could not even go and see the land they were giving to us as a present to start fresh.
But Marcela had some good news.
I had the telegram from the Australian embassy and they were saying, you've been granted to go to Australia and you need to come into a general meeting 9 o'clock a.m. at the embassy. So Gonzalo came home like in pieces and I showed to him the telegram and he said, we're safe. We're just safe.
They started to prepare to leave. They sold their few valuable items and gave the rest away.
And we started to say bye-bye to everybody and that was another... I couldn't show I was happy to leave because everybody was sad. But I was happy.
It left Marcela conflicted.
It was a hard time because I knew in a country I never know, a language I never know. I was looking for the safe time, like go back to that woman got married when I was 20 years old and I didn't have any worry, no problems. And I didn't have the repression. I didn't have the fight. I didn't have the anger, you know, so... To take the aeroplane, it was to go back to the day I got married, you know, with all my dreams and feelings. And yeah. I thought I need to do whatever to go back to that time when me and Gonzalo were in love and that love, it was beautiful, didn't have no pain, no sorrows. So it was like... I couldn't show how happy I was. We took the decision, but with a lot of different feelings, opposite feelings anyway. He was still fighting. I wanted to fight, but I could not fight any longer because I was very tired. I want to change everything just to go back and be a mom and have my family again. But I didn't realize when I got into the airplane, what I was leaving behind. To be selfish and decide to leave everything behind just for us, it had a cause. It had a big cause, a conscious cause. Remorse. With ourselves, we leave our country. Why we didn't stay and just continue, and we left everything. We left everything what we did belong to. And here we didn't belong to anything. Absolutely nothing. My country, Australia, gave me the freedom I never had, the possibility of a job, have skills, learn another language I never had the chance to learn. I learned to drive. I've been part of everything I could get involved in Australia, my country. I'm a citizenship because I like to be part of this society. Whatever I could not have in my country, I got it here in Australia. So I miss dearly my own hometown, my family, but as well, I belong to Australia. My roots are here, my grandchildren are here, and yeah, this is my country too.
When they arrived, they were settled in Melbourne, where they lived for 8 years. In many ways, life was simple and good.
Here in Australia, we never were unemployed. Even without English, Gonzalo and me, we always did work, we always did something. So we wasn't just, you know, using everything, the system to sort of survive. We were contributing as well. We were very happy to have a job we never had in Chile. Mm.
That's you what you're fighting for in Chile.
Yeah. You know, I was so happy to clean toilets because I was getting money for it. I didn't care how to clean toilets. And Gonzalo was so happy to have the chance to have a try and study something and use all these tools Australia was giving to us to be better.
But they were living in limbo.
So we never did kind of thinking we're going to stay forever in Australia. We were all doing this solidarity work for Chile. We were still demanding the dictatorship to go from here, from Melbourne. We were doing things to support our country, but emotionally, we were in limbo anyway. We were working, studying, doing all the things you do, normal life, but we were suspended. We were like, we cannot plan in here in Australia. We cannot plan in anything in Chile.
In 1990, democracy was formally restored to Chile. They had a chance to go back under a program established by the UNHCR to help Chilean exiles return. They jumped at the opportunity.
We did work 2 years non-stop to save enough money to go back to Chile and start all over again.
They had plans to start a welding business and a small photocopy shop.
So Gonzalo did save enough money to get enough tools to get his own workshop in Chile in welding. And we did bought a computer and 2 photocopies machine.
They packed up their family and returned, this time to Talca in the south.
We never went back to the capital city. We decided just to go back to one of the cities in South Chile. It was more peaceful, more quiet.
But their past followed them.
Gonzalo had a background. And that background did follow us everywhere we were. Yeah. And it did impact in everything we used to do. He was marked for life. Gonzalo did try to get his workshop running. He never got the license for that. It was denied to have the license and the permit from the council to set up his workshop.
On what basis?
Nothing. It just wasn't granted. No reasons. They just did say there was too many shops in those fields and there was a lot of excuses. He could not get his driving license, so he was always driving illegal. So I was running the photocopy shop, But whatever I was getting from there wasn't enough to cover all the expenses of the family, children to school, two rents. Gonzalo never could apply for a job. His legal paper were saying about his jail life, so nobody's giving a job to him. And then once again, he started getting arrested.
And did you lose a lot of the community? So the people that you'd been in the all these different organizations with before? You
that was all in the capital city. And because we didn't choose to go back to the capital city, we did lose all that contact.
The sense of community they had known before was gone. They had formed new relationships in Talca, but it was complicated. The dictatorship had damaged society.
When we went back to Chile, people actually did hate people returned to the country. Because they did say, you did leave the country when we were really need you to fight or to do more for the country. And you did choose the easy way escape. People did accuse you a lot of things. You come back to the country to take all these good things about where we done. So it was really bad. That was the dictatorship job, divide Chile. Divide Chile. Even because we were in a little city, we start knowing people from everywhere because the photocopy shop. And one day we got a person there and he came and said, Mr. Gonzalo, you better be careful what you're doing. There's people behind you. So one more time, we have to rethinking what we're doing in Chile.
And so after 3 years back in Chile, they left.
We didn't feel part of anything. I don't know if you understand, but we didn't feel part of Australia because we didn't want to be attached psychologically to Australia. Then we went back to our country with all the expectation we're going to fit in our home, country home, and we didn't fit in our country home. And that was worse than anything.
And there was another push to leave. They had to return to Australia within 4 years if they wanted to keep their permanent residency. They had a family meeting and decided to return, this time to Brisbane.
So one more time, we decided just to reduce everything to suitcases and come back.
And how was it different the second time?
I think it was worse because we knew we couldn't be in our own country. And that was very sad. We couldn't be part of our society. We couldn't be with our friends, with our family, with my sisters, Gonzalo, with his family. We could not survive. And because we could not shine the situation, we have to choose the hardest way again, leave everything behind and be selfish as well. Take the children away from the family and change everything for have a job, have a career, or give careers to our children, give the chance to our children to go to university or do something with their life. We didn't have that opportunity in Chile. We have to change all that sentimental things, feelings and memories and everything, sell everything what we have and start from zero again. I think it was worse than everything before. Because we knew it's going to be no return. So.
Do you think it was the right decision?
The loss is enormous because we just don't belong to Chile anymore. I'm happy my children can go to the other end of the world and they're going to be comfortable. They can go anywhere and they know we're part of the human race, we're part of this world, but they're not Chilean anymore. You know, that thing you carry with you, wherever you go, I'm Australian. So we lost that sense. I'm happy, but as well, sometimes I'm very sad because whatever is in my skin, in my blood, in my bones, belong to my hometown and my country, my South America, is just going to die with me. you know, my children are going to continue speaking Spanish in with who they can, but the next generation is already mixed. I'm okay with that. I'm happy with that. But as a mom, as a Chilean woman, I feel like the loss, it was very great. It was big. My dear country will be no boundaries, no hate, no capitalism, no war, more tolerance to other races and other people and other colors, more happy, more united, more solidarity between people, more honest as well. Then everybody respect each other. That could be my country. We try to pass it on, our beliefs to our children. We try to pass it on what is right, because you cannot just exist where you are. You're part of a society, you're part of a system, you're part of a country. And what we believe with my husband is, if you're part of something, you have to be active in that, in what you believe and what you're thinking is right. And you are in this world for a reason. Some people believe in religion. Some people believe in other things. We believe in the transformation of the world and the society. We believe a fight for a better condition for everybody. You always have to think in as a community, as a part of a system, as a part of something. You know, individual. You know, just work, get drunk, sleep, have fun, work, get drunk, have fun. You have to do something to live something. But that is us. Mm-hmm. And whatever we've been doing, with all these up and downs, comes and goes, change country, change school, change people, you know, we don't know how much our children is going to pass it on. And for us, it's important to pass it on. They don't know deep down the human side, because we never been sitting down as a family and talk about this. We've been trying to show our children we're resilient, we're strong, we can continue going on, but we didn't want to show them we're the victims of something. And I don't want through this thinking, poor me too. That's not my goal. But for me, it's the chance to know the other mom. Hasn't been time to sit down and see the other mom. So for me, it's like a good tool for the future. Maybe I'm not going to be here in the next 30, 40 years. We don't know what is going to be the future battles for humanity. And maybe they can just go back and listen this and this and say, my mom, my dad, that we went through this, maybe I can survive what is coming. Just to use it as a tool. One of the things I did learn to come into Australia is because Chile is just one of many. When we were living in Chile, that little dot in the map was everything. You know, our battle and our struggle was everything. But then we came to Australia and our view of the rest of the world did change. So we decide, well, Chile is one thing, but there's so much to fix around. And we would like to be part of that fixing process. We cannot stop that. It's with us. It's in our skin. I'm not fighting for Chile, but now we have to change for our planet. The big company now destroying the planet. Where I am, what I'm going to leave for my grandchildren, where I am in this mess.
There is something about the giant story behind this suburban grandmother. It's the invisible story of so many migrants. How do you leave behind a past that's so extraordinary and then find your way back to some sense of normal?
You've lived in Australia for
28 years. Except 3, 25.
And so much of your time in Chile as an adult was driven by your political work. Mm-hmm. And then coming to Australia, you've continued to do that in some ways, but that hasn't been the centre of your day-to-day life anymore. So now your work for a long time has been as a nurse's assistant?
Since 2003.
2003.
Yeah, when I came back to Brisbane, I decided to go to TAFE. So I decided to get something related to the healthcare field.
And how do you feel about that work? Do you feel content?
I used to love that job because in some way it was fulfilling my needs of giving, because I wasn't doing any very active political work with anybody. I haven't been part of any organization since I've been in Brisbane. I decided to do that because I was needed to be free, to be just do what I really want to do. I didn't want to be part of
an affiliated
organization or movement or anything. I just want to be, just to have the freedom to decide what
your
I want
own.
To do. Yeah. Yeah, I did feel really happy doing that. Very happy. Very fulfilling to be part of people in need.
And what's next for you? What are you looking towards in the future?
At the moment, unfortunately, because my job situation is not very stable, I'm not sure.
We asked Marcela her thoughts on what it means to be a refugee.
It means a lot. It means try to survive and try to fit in another society. That is a lot. Try to learn another language. Try to go to work and not to take any serious when you get discriminated because you come as a refugee, because you are black or you are yellow or you are Indian or you're Pakistan. When you have to leave your country, it's not because you like it. It's not because you're coming to take advantage of this country. We're not coming to take anything. We're just coming to be part of something in whatever way. We need to feel like we're part of something.
I think I need time to process everything that you've told
Did
us.
Did I traumatize you?
No, it's a huge story.
Thank you for that. But I'm not doing just to show up Gonzalo's journey and my journey. I'm just doing because if this one is going to improve something in the future. And as well, in honor to all those women in Chile that suffered the same thing I did, and all the people lost their life, all the people still looking for the disappearing family, for whoever did struggle in Chile. I'm just one person part of this big thing. So if my story can change people's belief or people's opinion how to see other people's life, it will be nice, but I'm not that important. I'm just part of something. And I'm glad I was part of something. And my husband, this is 3 years of child, believing that was okay. You know what I mean? So in the bottom of our heart, we're still feeling happy. We've been part of something. And that is important, I think.
Yeah.
Very important.
We think these are important conversations to be having, and we'd love you to join in. Find us on Facebook or Instagram at In My Country Podcast.
If you like what you've heard, please tell your friends and rate us on your podcasting app or wherever you're listening. It helps us to be heard by more people.
This podcast was produced and edited by Adam Wood and Pia Perversi-Birchall.
Sound is mixed by David Gaylard. All of our music is from Free Music Archive. You can find full credits in the show notes or at inmycountrypodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.